Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
But this one's for Pat!
That's right. You know what time it is, Broncos country. You are Locked On Broncos. It is time to drop some knowledge. I'm Chad Jensen, the publisher of MileHighHuddle.com. And with me, as always, is my co-host, Luke Polglaze, a semi-pro football coach, an NFL draft analyst, among many other football duties. Luke, what's good, my friend?
No complaints here. I am loving the fact that we are now through the combine, which means the next big event on the draft board, so to speak, is the NFL draft itself. So the draft churns steadily forward.
The draft cometh. And we're going to talk about some of the Broncos buzz, at least a couple of storylines here that came out of the combine. But first, please understand that we are committed to bringing you a daily podcast that focuses entirely on your Denver Broncos 5 days a week. And we're not here to just report the news. We're here to give you a deep dive on your favorite team. So help us out. Share the episodes on Twitter. Share them on Facebook. Share them on Reddit. Help us blow this thing up. Check out our work at MileHighHuddle.com. Killer premium Broncos content. More deep dive stuff for you Broncoholics out there, you sick maniacs listening to this show. And check out the work Luke's doing over at Inside the Pylon covering the NFL draft. He's got a lot of good stuff coming down the pike. So tune into that. And follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Broncos. Just take a second, flip open the app on your phone, find at Locked On Broncos, and click the follow button, because we have thousands of daily listeners to this show. But like, I don't know, less than 300 followers on Twitter. It doth not make sense. It doesn't stand to reason. But we know you love us just like we love you. So take a second, follow the show on Twitter. The home of Locked On Broncos is Audio Boom, but make sure you're subscribing on iTunes. And if you are an Android user, check out Stitcher as well, because here we are in the middle of free agency week, and you're not going to want to miss a single episode. Now, Luke, Nick Kendall put up an interesting piece after spending all day Saturday interviewing defensive linemen and linebackers at the NFL Scouting Combine. And in this piece, Nick touched on the four, or at least his top four off-ball linebackers in this class, which are Alabama's Reuben Foster, who got 86 from the combine. Well, maybe we can talk about that for a minute, Luke. Vanderbilt's Zach Cunningham, Florida's Jared Davis, and Temple's Hassan Riddick. Now, in his time talking to these prospects, with the exception of one player, Nick was struck by the fact that none of them had met with the Broncos or had a meeting scheduled with Denver. The one guy who had met with the Broncos was Riddick, who had a very nice day in the drills on Sunday, made himself a lot of money. Now, Nick brings up a good point, though, Luke. The highest that John Elway has ever drafted an inside linebacker was in 2011, his first year with the Broncos. He wasn't even the GM then, technically. He was vice president of football operations, and Brian Zanders was the general manager. But nevertheless, Nate Irving was the third-round pick, spent 4 years with the Broncos, and then left after his rookie deal. Since then, Elway's drafted, I can think of four off the top of my head, inside linebackers, but they've all been mid to late-round picks, including Danny Trevathan, who was a six-rounder. So how do you interpret this, Luke, with the Broncos not necessarily showing overt interest in these top inside linebackers? Are you inclined to believe, for example, that it's a sign that Denver won't take an off-ball linebacker in the first couple of rounds? Or do you think it means that they are interested, but they don't want to tip their hand? Because, again, Hassan Riddick, he worked his way into the first-round conversation, and with his experience as a former cornerback and his coverage skills, the speed that he displayed in the 40, I'm licking my chops imagining him playing next to Brandon Marshall.
Well, quite frankly, Reddick might have worked himself out of Denver's range, which seems crazy to say for a guy who wasn't really on anybody's radar going into something as recent as the Senior Bowl. He's just shot up everybody's boards, and he came out and just, I mean, flat dominated the combine. I mean, he had one of the single three or four best single combine showings, I thought. I mean, he went out and, you know, everybody was saying, okay, this kid's athletic. We know he's athletic. What's he going to do? He went out 4.52, blazed the 40, 24 reps in the bench press, 36-inch vertical jump, 133-inch broad jump. I mean, everything. You just look down the list. Check, 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 check.
Yep.
Freakish athlete. So, you know, he's a guy who I would love to see in Denver, but I don't know if Denver's going to take him there, quite honestly. Now, I do think it's interesting to note that Denver doesn't necessarily show the need to meet with their top guys before taking them.
Good point.
I mean, if you look back back to 12, they didn't meet with Derek Wolfe before taking him in the second round. And I think it's a very good point about Denver not really taking any inside linebackers high. I think Denver has had a defense over the past couple of years that has really been kind of one that you can plug in kind of your weak side outside linebackers into the middle and just get those smaller developmental guys who need a couple of years to get up to NFL strength and speed. And then they can play the middle as well. We saw that happen with Brandon Marshall. Obviously, Corey Nelson has been that route. Todd Davis. And I think it's interesting. Yeah, exactly. And just to look at the last time Denver linebacker in the draft, 2014, their first three rounds were Bradley Roby. He was a great value that fell to them, so I don't have an issue with that. Cody Latimer, they obviously saw the need to go up and trade for him. Michael Schofield.
Wah-wah.
Who knows? but, you know, they're round three already. So, they took a guy in the fifth round in Lamine Barrow, who's now a Bear. But, you know, when it came down to that, at a certain point, you have to go not by value, but by your board. So at that point, when you're looking at the board in the third round and saying, man, we really need offensive line, you know, that's how quickly the board can fall sometimes in the NFL draft.
Yeah, that's true. And a lot of it does have to do with how the Broncos value inside linebacker, because, you know, they might. And if you look at the evidence, it would suggest, it would tell you that the Broncos, they don't value inside linebacker as highly when it comes to their draft board as other positions like defensive line, cornerback, wide receiver, offensive line even. Because, I mean, again, Nate Irving, third round pick, Lamine Barrow, fifth round pick, Corey Nelson, seventh round pick, and even going a little farther back with Mike Muhammad, I believe he was a sixth round pick. So that kind of tells you, and then, again, as Luke pointed out, a lot of guys they bring in off the scrap heap and off of the undrafted college free agent pool, like your Zaire Andersons, Brandon Marshall off the scrap heap, and even some other guys. So how do they value them? I honestly, with the holes they have, as nice as it would be to get a Reddick in Denver, if he's there at 20, I'd be really disappointed if the Broncos passed on picking him. But at the same time, they have some other needs. You know, they do have guys. I don't think inside linebacker was necessarily their biggest issue on the front seven last year. I think it was the defensive line outside of Derek Wolfe. You know, Brandon Marshall does have injury concerns. I mean, the biggest problem for him since he signed his deal, his extension with the Broncos, has been staying on the field. So there is that to consider, but I think the rotation of guys they had with Todd Davis, Corey Nelson, and Zaire Anderson, you know, even though they're not the flashy guys and the high-round draft picks, they can hold down the fort in a worst-case scenario if Denver plugs some holes on the D-line in free agency. So you look at that, where the Broncos needs, and I know John Elway talks about, you know, we don't draft for need, we want to stay to the best player available, but, and I've talked about this for a long time, and Eric Trickle, in fact, Luke, he put up a piece last week that really, I thought, very, very succinctly built the case that John Elway's drafts, dating all the way back to 2011, have been more based on need than BPA. And I think most fans will have a hard time kind of wrapping their brains around that. But when you look at the case that Eric lays out, it's hard to argue. In other words, I would say it's probably a 50-50 proposition Luke, that the Broncos draft for need in the first round. They might just take the best player available, which when they have taken the best player available in the past, the propensity has been with the first pick in their draft, whether it's a first round or second round or like with Derek Wolfe. But I think it's 50-50. It might be a need pick, and if it is, it's probably not going to be an inside linebacker. If it is a BPA type of pick, Luke, and a guy like Reddick is there, I wouldn't be surprised if they did take him.
And if it's a guy like Reddick, I'm going to sprint to that draft podium, because for me, as a former defensive coordinator, a guy like Reddick, I can use so many different ways. I mean, he came to Temple as a walk-on cornerback, you know, a young kid. I saw a great story on social media over the weekend about his mother taking out a loan so that he could get a meal card just to fit in. And, you know, it's a fantastic story of working. You know, it's going to make headlines for a week wherever he gets drafted.
Yep.
Going to be plenty of fodder for the newspapermen there. But, you know, that means he's an athletic kid, came in as a cornerback. He's played off-ball linebacker, edge rusher. He's just worn so many hats for Temple.
Yep.
But I really like what I can do with him. If I'm a defensive coordinator, I can use that versatility. Now, on the flip side, of course, we saw this weekend, Reuben Foster got sent home from the combine.
Yeah, we need to talk about that.
I mean, quite honestly, you're probably going to say, hey, Luke, what does this mean for NFL teams? I don't know. I genuinely have no idea what this means. What it appears is that, you know, he got into some kind of altercation with a hospital worker, pulled the old "don't you know who I am" card. Always a winner. Basically threatened to physically, you know, lay hands on this person. You know, that's big. And I have no idea, quite frankly, how NFL teams are going to evaluate that. And maybe he slips to Denver.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to be talking about this for weeks. So what does this mean? I have no idea what this means, quite frankly.
Yep. Well, there's still a long road to hoe until the draft. So a lot of different things could happen. And Reuben Foster has been such a transcendent talent on the field that might, you know, overshadow this unfortunate event that happened for him at the combine, which doesn't speak kindly to his character. You know, his smarts. I mean, hello, you're under the microscope. This is arguably the biggest moment of your football career, and you're going to get into an altercation with a doctor at the combine. So it does call into question the quality of person he is, but it doesn't really take away from what his ability is on the field. So my bet still would be that he's probably not going to be there at 20 if I had to bet today. But all bets are off, because something that major can really throw a monkey wrench into the whole draft process. And I think if the Broncos had either one of those guys drop to 20 and Elway sticking to the BPA mantra, you couldn't go wrong with either one of those guys, Luke.
Oh, no, absolutely. Both of them are going to make an NFL franchise very happy. And this is not a particularly deep inside linebacker class, but it is, I think, pretty top heavy. So between both of those, you got guys who are going to come out and, you know, make an impact for their teams pretty quickly, in that, you know, these are not kids who are, you know, still raw. These two are both athletic specimens who can come in, fly around, and raise some havoc from day one.
Well, hey, we are going to talk about a couple more pieces of Bronco buzz that came out of the combine, a couple things that we learned from our friend Nick Kendall. But before we do, let's talk about the sponsor of today's show, which is Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/LOBroncos. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from on your iPhone, your Android, Kindle, or even your MP3 player. So think about it. For you, the listeners of Locked On Broncos, Audible is offering a free audiobook, a free 30-day trial to give you that chance to check out their service. You can get titles such as The Girl on the Train, The Hobbit, Divergent. I mean, there's multiple titles. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/LOBroncos. Again, that's audibletrial.com/LOBroncos. And again, I want to say that I use this service on a daily basis. So I'm not trying to, Luke and I here, sell you something that doesn't have worth or merit. In fact, it's part of my daily ritual. Right now, I'm listening to Atlas Shrugged, a book on Audible. It's a long one. It's like 80 hours, but I'm a nerd, so you don't have to listen to 82-hour long books, but check it out. Now, another takeaway, Luke, that came from Nick's reporting, anyway, at the Combine, involves the top tackles, the top offensive tackles in this year's draft class. Now, the Broncos have met with Alabama's Cam Robinson, Utah's Garrett Bowles, and Wisconsin's Ryan Ramczyk, among several others. They've also met with guard prospects like Forrest Lamp and Dan Feeney. Now, this is a top-heavy class at the O-line. And, Luke, a lot depends on how the first round is going to fall. Again, this is a class that's stacked at defensive line, defensive back, tight end, and wide receivers. The wide receivers made some hay over the weekend in Indianapolis. And there's always going to be those teams who are going to reach for a quarterback in the first or a skill position player, which can really shuffle the deck and change how boards fall. There are three QB candidates in particular. I think it's fair to say three guys that are being considered in the first round that teams could rush to reach for. And the more I get the lay of the land with these draft prospects coming out of the combine, the more I'm starting to think that the Broncos will have one of the top three tackles available to them at pick 20. Now, the question, Luke, is should they invest another draft pick in a tackle when they've had such terrible luck in years past? I mean, notwithstanding Orlando Franklin, who was a solid pick, you look at Tyson Brailoe, you look at Phillip Blake, you look at Vincent Painter, they haven't had the greatest success under John Elway. Michael Schofield, Max Garcia, Matt Paradis, I guess, has been a success. But they haven't had the greatest success hitting on O-line prospects in the draft, Luke. So it makes, I mean, should they, or should they just try and fill this hole in free agency and look to other needs in the draft?
I think every single O-line prospect that you named there has some kind of question going on with them. Maybe except Lamb, who I think I just love. I think it's a pretty common sentiment, but you know, Cam Robinson.
Lamb.
Yeah,
I love,
right.
I love Lamb.
Cam Robinson, off the field issues, Bowles, you know, age issues, experience issues, Ramczyk, you know, meds. It goes on from there. You know, this is a draft class with a lot of questions, offensive tackle. And I know we talked about this last week, and I actually didn't bring this up at the time. I kind of wish I had. There has not been a draft class in a very, very long time that did not have an offensive tackle go top 10. It's just it's a nature of the position that it gets overdrafted. I believe I'm going to have to do some research here, but I believe the last time was 03, if I can remember off the top of my head.
I would believe that's true. Yeah.
It's certainly been, you know, a very long time. So the nature of the position is that they, you know, they get reached on. Offensive tackles get reached on. They get overdrafted. And that, you know, is to the benefit of some players and to the absolute deficit of others. I'm looking at it now as 2005, the year Alex Smith went first overall. So, you know, when you're talking about offensive line evaluation, obviously you got to get somebody who's going to be available. Off the field issues, medical issues, those are a big, big issue. But, you know, if Denver wants to address that in free agency, they'll certainly have the option too. My thing is, and I know I've said this in the past, and this has been my kind of working theory for a couple of years, Denver, with John Elway in particular, have shown in the past few years that they've been great evaluators. However, they have always consistently struggled to evaluate offensive linemen.
Can't get around it.
You know, Phillip Blake was what, a fourth round pick?
He was a number four pick.
Yeah, he was out of the league in 2 years.
Yep.
Or at least out of Denver. So Denver has just struggled so consistently with drafting and evaluating offensive linemen, which really kind of is a league-wide trend. But Denver just seems particularly markedly poor at it, considering the amount of success that they have had despite that.
Right. Well, and they've been lucky to have made some decent decisions on the free agent market, bringing guys in. And a lot of those guys have been stopgap dudes. I mean, you look at what they did at center for those few years, Dan Coppin, Manny Ramirez, just kind of putting a Band-Aid over a bullet hole when things went sideways with J.D. Walton. They brought in Luis Vasquez, who really has been the crown jewel or the shining example of Elway going out on the free agent market and bringing in a guy who can make an impact on the offensive line. Was named a first-team All-Pros first year with the Broncos in 2013, and then was a core part of that offense that helped to win the Super Bowl, of course, in establishing the running game down the stretch and into the playoffs. Beyond that, you know, you look at last year, Donald Stevenson, they whiffed on that, strike one. Russell Okung, I mean, we've talked about the vagaries of Okung and his ups and downs. I mean, my take on him is he wasn't as disappointing as he was as a left tackle in 2016. He was not Denver's biggest problem on the offensive line. You know, he's arguably the second best player behind Matt Paradis last year, and that's why the Broncos are still open to bringing him back, depending on what they find on the open market. But this is another one of those situations, Luke, and we've spitballed so many different options this year, whether it's in the draft or free agency, even bringing a guy like Luis Vasquez back, because there aren't a lot of locked-in options at tackle. So the reality is, unless the Broncos want to spend a ton of money on a guy like Kevin Zeitler, who's going to command around $11 million a year, or even Ricky Wagner, who's looking at $9 to $10 million a year, unless they're going to do that, they're going to have to find value signings on the free agent market, put together another patchwork starting five with one or two solid swing guys as backups, tackles, and guards, and then hope like hell, I think, Luke, that Mike McCoy and Jeff Davidson are going to be able to turn the ship around and coach these guys into a cohesive unit.
Well, that's the thing. And this week at the Combine, we've seen, you know, if anything, athletes aren't what they used to be at the offensive line positions. This is a pretty weak offensive line class, and it comes in after a string of comparatively pretty weak offensive line classes. I would say no team around the league, with the exception of Dallas, who consistently invests first round picks into it, really has a line that you can go out and say, you know, even, you know, the worst player on this line is better than the best player on any other lines, or like name a line. You know, there's no real kind of, it's just a general parody of, okay, you've got a couple really good guys on each line and then a bunch of guys who are scrubs, and you're just desperately trying to find an option there. That seems like a trend league wide right now, quite honestly.
Yep.
To the point that guys like in Kansas City, you know, Duvernay Tardif just got 4 years, like $48 million or something, you know, ridiculous money for a guy who's been a starter kind of off and on for a couple of years and is only now just starting to hit his stride.
Yep. You've talked about that, Doc Bear, Mile High Huddle guy, of course, the guy who started It's All Over Fat Man for you OGs listening to this show. He's talked about just the dearth of talent and what NFL teams are faced with in the modern game, in the modern era, in having to quickly develop tackles and guards through the learning curve because of the deficiency in education and teaching and the way college teams structure their spread offenses. Things just aren't taught the right way, and so teams are going to miss more often than not. Now, I'm on record as saying that I like Garrett Bowles. I wouldn't be disappointed if the Broncos did take Bowles at 20 if he was there. But he had a strong combine, too. He might not be there with such a weak tackle class at pick 20. But we're going to find out this week, really. It's going to help us to project what to expect in the draft this week. John Elway talked about at the combine last Wednesday that the Broncos are all about value signings in free agency. And maybe, Luke, there are some guys on the market that they can bring in to upgrade the position without breaking the bank. We'll see.
Right. And every team, you know, every year is going out into free agency saying, you know, we're going to find that bargain guy who's going to come in and really, you know, make an impact on this line. Every year, every team goes into that free agency period, again, unless they don't have really a gaping need at the line. And every year, we're going through the same stuff coming out of free agency too, going into the draft. They're saying, all right, we're going to find someone in the draft. You know, the NFL, if anything, a flat circle is the NFL.
Yeah, there you go.
Talent evaluation is a flat circle.
Well,
and it just coming back to that.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting week. You know, this episode is for Tuesday. That's when teams can start reaching out and negotiating with prospective free agent targets. So in the coming days, we're going to have a better picture and a lot more to talk about as it relates to the Broncos free agent draft haul. But that'll do it for today. Be sure to follow @LockedOnBroncos on Twitter. You can find Luke on Twitter at Luke Polglaze and myself at Chad N. Jensen. We dig it when you reach out to us on Twitter, so hit us up. And check out the other killer podcasts on the network, Locked On NFL Draft, Locked On NFL, both great shows. And don't forget to subscribe, y'all. For Luke, I'm Chad. We'll talk to you tomorrow.